drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. Brisbane, New York, Venice, Fukushima, heavy rain, storm surges and tsunamis have caused major floods across the world over the last few decades. As sea levels rise, it is likely that these events will become more frequent and more extreme. But how likely is that, and what can be done to prevent the damage? Jeff Goodell is the contributing editor at Rolling Stone, and his latest book, The Water Will Come. Jeff has travelled around the world to find out how different cities are dealing with the threat of rising sea levels and to try and understand what the future holds. He joins me in the drawing room. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Let's look at the past first, because sea level changes aren't a new thing, are they? You point to stories in Australian Indigenous communities about the changing landscape in your work.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Some linguists who have studied the Indigenous communities in Australia really have figured out that in the stories of these Indigenous people are actual sort of witnessing of sea level rising during the end of the last ice age, when sea levels were rising quite quickly because the ice was melting quite rapidly. And it's the chapter of the book about this is the oldest story ever told. And it really is the oldest human stories that we know of, both written and oral, are about flooding.
You suggest that some of the problems we're dealing with now are the result of our changing relationship with the coastline. What do you mean by that? What changing relationship do we have with the coastline?
Well, one of the problems that we face right now, unlike Indigenous people who lived thousands of years ago, or unlike sort of simpler places that I visited in Africa and in Asia, where we have built a lot of infrastructure, roads, buildings, houses, condominiums, bridges, ports, airports, right on the coastline, with the notion that where the water is and where the land is more or less fixed, and that it will always be that way. And one of the things that we're discovering as our world warms up is that is going to be changing. And in my book, I argue with it, it's going to be changing quite rapidly. And so when you think about that, and we think about the kind of economic value, if nothing else, of what's at risk, and how it's going to have to change how we think about our cities and how our cities on the coast operate. It's a profound, profound change that's coming, and it's in the very near future.
You begin the book with the vision of Miami as a future Atlantis. Isn't that a fairly extreme possibility?
No, it's not an extreme possibility. I mean, you can argue about how fast it will happen. I write about a sort of hypothetical Category 5 hurricane coming to Miami in a couple of decades. Miami's right in the hurricane track. It's more or less inevitable that Miami is going to get hit by a massive hurricane. It has many times in the past, and it will again. And as sea levels rise, these storm surges that come with hurricanes will get more and more damaging. And, you know, at a certain point with especially a coastal city like Miami, which is very low, a lot of real estate right on the water and right in harm's way, and built on a kind of limestone that is very porous and doesn't really allow sea level walls to be built. You know, there's going to be a question about, you know, do we rebuild here or do we not? And, you know, most 70% of Miami-Dade County, or basically South Florida, is less than 6 feet above sea level. And, you know, I think most, just about every climate scientist that I've talked to believes that we're going to have 6 feet of sea level rise or so, 2 meters, by the end of the century. And it's very hard to see how a city like Miami survives in that kind of with that kind of sea level rise.
You traveled around the world to different cities. Talk me through the different approaches that are being taken, because we are dealing with this globally. Our reaction to it or our planning around it is very different according to where we live, right?
It is very different because every city and every coastline has a kind of different issues and different problems. But I should say first that not very many people or not very many places are doing much yet. I mean, the awareness of this threat is only, you know, a decade or so old, and it's the scale of the risk is becoming more and more known just in the last 5 or 6 or 7 years or so. So this is a relatively new idea. So it's not like anybody is doing big projects yet to deal with this. But there's a lot of thinking going on. And of course, the Dutch are the leaders in this. The Dutch have been thinking about how to live with water and how to protect themselves from the seas for 1,000 years. And they're by far the most advanced in thinking about this. And they've built, as anyone, most people know, a series of dikes and walls to help keep the sea out, to drain the land and create agricultural areas and cities and things. But it's interesting, the Dutch have been, you know, are starting to change their views, and they're not building walls anymore. And they're realizing that because of the speed of which sea level rise is likely to happen, they're going to have to learn to sort of live with water more. So they're beginning to explore things like floating houses, you know, various kinds of infrastructure that that can live with water, city squares that can double as storage basins and then drain the water out slowly so the city doesn't flood. I would say the Dutch are the most advanced. New York, after Hurricane Sandy, has been doing a lot of thinking and doing some significant projects, such as raising all the infrastructure above ground level on all new buildings that are being built, all the critical infrastructure like heating and electricity generation and things like that. There's a number of remarkable kind of coastal protection projects with breakwaters and things like that that are being tried in New York in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy. But it's still all really new, and it's very complex because it's one thing to raise a house or a building, you know, a few feet or a dozen feet, however much you want. It's quite another thing to think about moving airports and protecting roads and thinking about beach erosion and how to deal with beach erosion. And so it's still just a beginning to kind of happen.
Miami is actually looking at raising the entire city by 2 feet. How do you even do that?
That's exactly the question I asked.
Like, honestly, can you do that?
No. I mean, yes, you can. But, you know, it's not, there's nothing, you know, it's not like, you know, putting a man on Mars or something where we don't know how to do that. We know how to raise a building and we know how to raise streets. The question is, you know, why 2 feet, not 3 feet? Why 2 feet, not 5 feet? And the other question is, where's the money going to come from? It's incredibly expensive. And certainly there are some buildings that are worth raising and saving and will be raised and are being raised and saved. But there's a lot of stuff in Miami Beach and in most other coastal cities that are not worth saving and are not worth spending hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars to elevate. And so there's this fantasy idea in Miami Beach that we're, you know, they're just going to raise the city. But when I pushed hard on this and began asking for actual engineering plans for this or actual costs, nobody could come up with anything. So, you know, it's just a kind of wistful dream right now.
On RN, I'm Patricia Carvalis and Jeff Goodell is my guest in the drawing room. He's a contributing editor at Rolling Stone and the author of a new book, The Water Will Come. Take us out of the major cities and to the Marshall Islands. The threat of rising water covering the islands completely is relatively well known, but you point to the risk it will have on drinking water long before then. What are the risks?
Marshall Islands, you know, most of their drinking water comes from sort of a what they call a freshwater lens that kind of collects in the ground above the sea, the sea level, the seawater that's naturally comes up from beneath. So they're essentially aquifers on the island, but they're very susceptible to saltwater intrusion. So as the seas rise, the salt water seeps into these underground aquifers. And it doesn't just happen in the Marshall Islands. It's actually a big problem in many places, including South Florida, where the rising seas are pushing more and more into the aquifers. So one of the first problems that a lot of coastal communities face is salt water in their drinking water wells and how to deal with that. And, you know, that's not an insoluble problem. As most of us know, there's desalination plants in many coastal areas, except that it's very expensive, especially the big ones, to operate. It takes a lot of energy. Marshall Islands do not have the money or the wherewithal to build desalinization plants. So there's a lot of concern on the island about, you know, where fresh drinking water will come from. And that will be one of the first crises that they're, in fact, that they're already facing and will continue to face as the waters rise up.
Let's go to Venice. That's a place that's been dealing with water for a while now. They've been responding to rising water levels by building on top of the old city. Is that still an option?
Well, it's true that I spoke to some engineers in Venice, and he joked about this, about how in the past Venice would just keep building on top of the old structures. You know, they would build on top of the kind of foundations of old palazzos, and there's many layers of Venice under the current one that we see. But of course, now we're all aware of what a jewel Venice is, and you know, you can't move a brick, much less build on top of anything. So it's sort of frozen in place. And Venice, as most people know, has had a lot of problems with flooding because of the ground beneath it actually sinking. And that's because of groundwater pumping for various industrial purposes and things. So Venice has long faced a problem of increased water because they've been, you know, the city itself has been sinking. They've stabilized that. But there's still a big problem with the water coming in as the storm surges and sea level rise gets higher. I witnessed it myself while I was there, see water coming into Piazza San Marco while I was having my cappuccino. But they've done something that a lot of coastal cities are trying to do, which is build a big barrier out on the edge of the lagoon to try to hold the sea back. But it's also emblematic of a lot of the problems with these big barriers is that they spent 25 years engineering it and $5 billion or so to build it, but they didn't really factor in sea level rise. So it's going to be out of date. It's not even finished yet. They're still finishing it. It might be finished in the next year or two, but it will be out of date in a decade or two because of the rising waters. So, you know, it's a huge amount of money to spend. It's a great example of, you know, the problem with these big engineering projects is how do you engineer for, you know, this sort of uncertain future, whether we know it's going to be 2 feet of sea level rise in the next couple decades or 3 feet or 4 feet? How do you build in kind of flexibility for that?
And how you build it in is based on the estimates. Estimates leading into the Paris Accords talked about a maximum possible risk of a couple of feet. You say scientists were telling you 6 feet. That's a pretty significant discrepancy and, of course, has an impact on the way that you immediately deal with the problem. Why such a big discrepancy?
Well, because scientists are learning more about ice dynamics. You know, when you think about sea level rise, you know, it really, there's a lot of factors involved, including thermal expansion and mountain glaciers melting and all that. But it's really quite simple. It's really about how fast Greenland and Antarctica melt and the ice sheets on those two, poles, how quickly it melts. And as scientists understand better and better the risks of these ice sheet dynamics, especially in West Antarctica, where there's a significant risk of a major ice shelf collapse there, these numbers for projected sea level rise have gone up. You know, NOAA, the top U.S. science agency, has a high end of 8 feet now, which is, you know, well over 2 meters. And I don't really know any good scientists who think hard about this, who've done a lot of the sort of latest research on this, who have a kind of high-end risk that's much lower than that. So it's getting, the more we understand about how sensitive the system is, the higher the risk scenarios are going.
It's easy to get overwhelmed about a problem like this, such a big problem, such a wicked problem. And that's a point that you've made quite a few times in the book, that the important thing can be to make the problem small enough to solve. So what are some of the smaller problems or something tangible to deal with? Because it's a pretty bleak story.
Well, I mean, it is bleak in certain ways. I mean, it's not, you know, what it's really a story about is, you know, it's an economic story as much as anything, right? It's about what's going to happen to the value of a lot of places that are built in low places that were not built with this in mind. And the economic costs are what are going to be really huge. And so the first thing that we need to do to think about this is to stop building stuff in, you know, places that are risky and beginning to think differently about how we build on coastlines so that as this water rises, we're prepared for it.
We're already doing that to some extent, aren't we? If you just look at how expensive it is to insure a property, at least I can talk about the Australian coastline. It is a disincentive now. People are rethinking these things.
Well, that's really great. But, you know, there's still a whole lot of building. I mean, I have only been in Australia now for 3 days, so I'm still getting to know the place. But, you know, everywhere else in the world that I've traveled, you still see a whole lot of real estate being built in places that if you took the sea level rise scenarios at all seriously, you wouldn't be doing. And so I think stopping doing, you know, the first thing you do when you're, you know, in a hole is you stop digging. That's the first thing here. And I think that, you know, economic incentives like rising insurance rates for risky flood areas and things like that are really a good thing because they incentivize people to build in different places and in different ways. But eventually what's going to happen, and nobody really wants to hear this, but it's certainly true from, you know, all of the thinking and people that I've talked to, is that there's going to be some kinds of retreat from coastal areas. It's an inevitability about that. And so beginning to think about that and how to incentivize that, people moving away from risky coastal areas, is a big project to be working on.
This is such a big issue, and you've just mentioned how the science changes, you know, in relation to those sea levels rising. Has any of the science shifted since you submitted your manuscript? Has there been shifts that you haven't been able to include?
No, not really. I mean, I think that if anything, the sort of risk scenarios that I've described in the book, there've been a couple of new papers that have come out that have sort of solidified it. I'm actually a very fairly conservative in my kind of interpretation in the book of the science that I know and that I've read, and I'm very aware of the dangers of exaggerating and things like that. And I really stick, you know, close to the best science that I could find, and the best scientists in the world who I've spent a lot of time with to get this right. So, you know, unfortunately, because of what we're doing by continuing to burn fossil fuels at the rate we're doing and continuing to push our climate system warmer and warmer and faster, you know, I don't see a lot of sort of happy news about this on the horizon.
Jeff, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Jeff Goodell has been my guest in The Drawing Room. Jeff's a contributing editor at Rolling Stone, and his latest book is called The Water Will Come. And you can see him this week at the Sydney Writers' Festival or the Wheeler Centre in Melbourne.